Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. A reminder to everyone out there, these wise conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. And we're rounding up all month long. We'll be telling you all about St. Patrick's Day and corned beef and all that good stuff. And of course, it is a crab cake month. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. They're actually going down this guy's neighborhood. I'm going to be in Canton at Mama's on the Half Shell on Friday. Storytelling and no doubt enjoying a hubcap margarita before it's all over with. We're going to be next week at El Guapo. It's Latin week, man, because I'm Latin, because I'm Aparicio. That's why. We're going to El Guapo in Catonsville, having a crab cake over there on the 10th with Don Moeller. The 18th, we're at Costas. That's Friday afternoon, the 18th, 2 to 5. We'll be back in Dundalk and then down to Fadley's at Lexington Market. You know what? Out in front of Lexington Market, it says world famous Lexington Market. This guy has literally been all over the world and just got back from a place that that I went. There's certainly no lack of controversy over there in China, in Beijing. He has been my friend for about 25 years. We get together and sometimes we bitch about baseball. Sometimes we talk about the National Football League. Since he left the football team he used to cover, what became the Commanders. Dave Shinen lives in Baltimore, even though it says Washington Post. He is somewhere between Butchers Hill, Fells Point, Canton, and Patterson Park, right near the pagoda, hon. But you weren't there 3 weeks ago, dude. Man, you put an APB out on Facebook last week regarding people with creative questions for how the Chinese are doing things in 2022. And I am fascinated, dude. I'm going to put my feet up here. You can sing me songs, play the guitar, or you can tell me about China. How you doing, China? You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there, man. You know, finally 6 days after I landed, I'm finally getting my body clock back to East Coast time. And just kind of enjoying the daily life of a family man. It's good.
Well, I think I could grab your Facebook thread and I could read through, you know, all the questions your friends had about China, some of the statements you made. You're no stranger to the rodeo. You flush toilets in Sochi. You know what I mean? You, as we would say, you've seen some shit. You know what I mean? Like, you've been places. Run me through this. I mean, I think the last time we got together was 5-6 months ago. You were sort of prepping and we were probably talking about baseball or baseball lockouts, mm-hmm. or wars in Kiev or, you know, any of the other things that could be going on. But you just locked down your life, left the wife and kids in Patterson Park and ran off to China on behalf of the media, you know, the rat poison, and went over there. Apparently it was unique.
Yeah, I mean, oddly enough, I mean, I remember distinctly leaving Beijing in 2008 after the Summer Olympics and thinking to myself, man, you know, I'm glad I was here. I'm glad I did that. I saw the Great Wall. I met some people. I ate some great meals, but I will never be back to this place. 14 years later, I'm on a plane, you know, an Air China flight from Paris to Beijing with flight attendants in hazmat suits, coming around and shooting a thermometer at your forehead, even when you're asleep, a couple times during the flight, you know, getting COVID tested, you know, twice, in the 72 hours before the flight, just to get on the flight, getting COVID tested again when I landed in Beijing, COVID tested every single day while I was there, throat swabs, It was unlike any other experience. And I've been, like you said, I've been to Olympics in Russia. I've been to another one in China. I've been to Tokyo last summer for the Summer Games.
I was going to ask, you were in Tokyo recently, right?
And
I remember talking to you about that. And that was like, that was hardcore. And I was in Japan 2 years ago, and I mean, I love Tokyo. I love Japan. I've had great experiences there. I did not go back to China the last time. I went to Korea instead. Check that out. But I went to Hong Kong 15 years ago, and I guess I'll never go to Hong Kong again, right? Like, we're, the world is getting divided up into can or can't, and obviously that's going on, you know, in Ukraine right now, and what's going on with Russia, where we could have gone to St. Petersburg. I don't think you're going back to Sochi anytime soon. You know what I mean? Like, the world has changed dramatically since I invited you on the show last week, literally, right?
Yeah, even in the last week, you're right. I mean, you know, this Olympics was by far the hardest, least enjoyable. I mean, you know, I come away from every single Olympics thinking, wow, you know, that was really hard, but I'm glad I did it. There was something, you know, gained from it. This time I can't say that, you know, I mean, it was just a grueling, joyless kind of experience. And I didn't get to see anything or do anything because of the closed loop. The hard bubble.
When you say see anything or do anything, give me the loop of the bubble. Yeah. Were you on buses going to events? Were you there when the gal fell on the ice? Like, give me, because I did not watch the Olympics. I cord cut, dude. I moved on January 20th to the suburbs. We somehow didn't order cable TV, and my wife's a Verizon employee, and we have super fast speed, and I have the Twitter thing, and I have not subscribed to my Masson broadcast partners yet. And I'm like literally. I cut cord, so I had no real ability to watch it, but it also didn't like show up on my timeline. Like it was not like something everybody I knew was doing. And unlike my wife, and I've been married 20 years, right? She loves the Olympics. It didn't come to America that way this time around for sure.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's what I heard from a lot of people. I mean, the ratings were down. Ratings, you know, can be kind of misleading because it doesn't really weigh streaming. And, you know, they've made it, NBC has made it so that, you know, if you subscribe to their premium Peacock network, you could stream anything at any time, that kind of thing. But not many people are doing that. So, you know, you're at the mercy of NBC's coverage for the most part. And because of the 13-hour time difference, it was really hard, you know, to get anything live in prime time. People didn't really want to watch tape delayed events that are 12 hours old that they already know.
Remember the old embargoes, dude, when they would have them around the world, they'd be like, 8 o'clock, Bob Costas. Yeah. We can't tell anybody what's going on, right? That's all over with, right?
That's all over with. Yeah. So, I mean, I get it that this was not a well-watched Olympics. And, you know, frankly, I mean, you know, most of the biggest storylines there were sad. And like, I mean, I did not cover the figure skating. That was exceptionally sad, tragic even, you know, it was just ugly. You know, I'll let others talk to you about that if you want, but I did cover, you know, the alpine skiing quite a bit and Michaela Schifrin, and, you know, that was sad in its own way as well. I mean, here she was, you know, putting herself out there every single time and failing to get it done. And then coming to talk to the media for 20 minutes and opening up her heart. And, you know, I'm rarely in a position in the media where I'm wishing for less access, but I was standing there listening to her talk and was wishing somebody would cut her off because it was painful to listen to, you know. She was really hard on herself, and she was kind of processing it in real time in front of the cameras, and it was kind of painful. And so, you know, that was my the story takeaway that I took from these Olympics, you know, the thing that I covered. And it was just the stories were not as compelling as I found a normal Olympics to be. And I don't know if that's a function of the restrictive quality of everything or just the fact that everybody was dealing with so much mental stress over the COVID restrictions, the security, the, you know, the closed loop, the surveillance state in China. There was so much mental stress that I don't know if maybe it affected the athletes as well.
Dave Scheinert is here from the Washington Post. He and I covered the Orioles back when the Orioles were the Orioles almost 30 years ago now. He does live here in Baltimore, even though it says Washington Post on the I'm an old writer guy. So I go back to the 80s, and I remember being at the Evening Sun And Phil Jackman was going to cover the Seoul Olympics. And we had a big party for him at the house. Like all of, we all got together, sports writers, Molly Dunham, all of our, Sandy McKee. We all had, a ham and a cake and beer and like sent him off. And every newspaper would send people to Seoul, to Brazil, to Greece, you know, name any of these Olympics over the last 30, Sydney, pick any of them, right? And you're one of the guys in that loop. I know Christine Brennan. I know a handful of you types that have done this. My friend Trini Kuznarek has done curling around the world until this time around. So I know some people that are on the circuit, and over four decades, people that have done it, the Michael Phelps thing, right? Just following him around and covering him, getting out of the pool, Paul McMullen flying around the world, doing that for years. How many people are left? I mean, you're a big shot, Washington Post, you know, fly around on the big credit card and get all the clearance and the hazmat to go to China. Who's going to China besides you? Like, who's still there? I mean, who else in the world is financing this from a media standpoint to send people over to have this suboptimal experience with the Chinese folks?
It's a great question. I mean, we had a contingent of about 10 writers, two editors, and an IT person.
A lot of people.
Yeah. But the world has, the world of media has become very, a dichotomy has grown for sure between, you know, major national outlets like us. The New York Times had probably four times as many people as us. They probably had, I'm guessing, 40 people. The Wall Street Journal probably had 20 or so. USA Today, same kind of thing.
Still really heavily covered.
The mid-level papers that used to go, the Baltimore Sun, no chance. The LA Times had a handful of reporters. Minneapolis Star Tribune had two. But of course, Minneapolis is a major, you know, winter sports hub. I don't know that they would cover the summer games in the same way. But there's very few, I can't think of any other, mid-market kind of papers.
But I'm thinking of places like Norway and Sweden when you start to mention.
Yeah, they're there. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I was in Norway when the Winter Olympics were going on, man. And like alpine ski, it's the biggest of the big, right? Literally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, they had a major media presence there. I mean, some of those athletes are among, you know, the most visible athletes in Norway. Or, you know, Sweden for that matter, Netherlands. I mean, the Netherlands dominates speed skating. The Germans dominate, you know, sliding sports. The Norwegians dominate, you know, cross-country skiing. The Austrians and Swiss dominate alpine skiing. So some of those athletes are among the most visible athletes in their countries. And so, the media contingents were really strong from those countries.
So it's not diminished in the way that, like, when I go to the Super Bowl and there's just, like, a quarter of the amount of people that used to be there. Like, literally, I was in L.A. And that's about, you know, the fan not sending anybody ever for years. Yeah. That's about the Baltimore Sun not being represented anymore at the Super Bowl. Like the Baltimore Banner probably wouldn't be represented. They might not have a sports department from what I'm understanding. So like I'm seeing it diminish on my end. I'm wondering like who's sending a bunch of people over to Beijing in the middle of this other than the Washington Post? You know, I felt like there just wouldn't be a whole lot of people there. You're telling me this was a pretty robust bubble you were in. This isn't a bubble of you and me and Maskey sitting down in Fort Lauderdale on a trailer. This is a big media thing.
Oh, yeah.
And all of you are hazmatting, right? Literally.
Yeah. No, I mean, the numbers may have been down. I certainly don't know the specific count. I have anecdotally, I think I can tell you that the numbers were down this time. And I think that was more a function of COVID and the heavy, heavy restrictions that China put on us rather than any lack of interest. I mean, I know that like hotels opened up that we were, did not expect to be able to get rooms in the mountain regions for some of the Alpine. And those rooms opened up because of people not showing. So I know that there was probably a diminished number of media outlets there. I couldn't tell you how many, and I wouldn't read too much into it. I think it was more a function of COVID than lack of interest.
Well, give me your experience, Dave. I mean, you talked about the hazmat suits and you talked about the Chinese surveillance state, right? And my experience, I went to China in 2007. I went on an official State Department event. John Maroon was with me. One of your colleagues, Rick Mace, was with me. Cal Ripken was with me. I was with a video crew, but there was about 10 of us. And we went over and we got read the riot act by the State Department. You know, don't open your eyes in the shower because of the water. And we were staying at the St. Regis. We're staying at the nicest hotel I've ever stayed at in my life. And I've stayed in nice places. And we had a butler. I mean, it was crazy in China, in Beijing. But I'm going back 14 years. And this is, they were putting on the nice act. The bird's nest was built. They were showing us around the things they wanted us to see, but it was very, very obvious we were in a surveillance state. You know, for lack of a, I went to Tiananmen Square, I went to Montaigne and did all that stuff, but I can't imagine 14 years later where burner phones and like whatever they told you to do or not do, like saying the word Taiwan was against the, you know, don't do that. Whatever you do, don't mention Taiwan. That was sort of in the handbook they handed me on the plane on the way over. And we got briefed by the State Department about being cool when you're over there. Where is it 15 years later and during COVID? Because it seemed to me your post wasn't anything about sports or anything about the Olympics or the games or the people. It was more about like the experience of what you experienced in a unique way.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just put it this way. I mean, we were issued two burner phones. When I say burner phones, I just mean, you know, we were told to leave our regular devices home, laptop and phone. I did that. They stayed home behind,
hacking issued, because of hacking.
Yeah. Hacking, okay. Spyware, you know, malware, whatever was going to be, you know, put on there. But you know, we were required to have apps downloaded onto our phones to move through China. You had to, you know, produce a QR code on your phone to get into the country. And that had the QR code had to do with your health status and your COVID tests. And so you had an app on your phone, but you know, again, we were not going to put that on our regular phones. We were issued two burner phones, one to house the Chinese apps that were required and that were essentially, you know, spyware, trackingware. They were to track your movements. You had to fill out your daily health status on those apps. The train app was on there, or if you were to travel by train between the mountain region and the urban region. And then the second phone was just to do our normal sort of work on, where email, you know, Slack, Twitter, things like that. And then the laptop, same thing, you know, and all of these devices, the intention was to just trash them when we got home or wipe them or whatever, because of whatever's on them. We were instructed, do not, you know, make sure you turn off the Wi-Fi on those devices before you get home so that they don't connect to your home networks. I mean, I just think that whatever was going on in 2007 for you and in 2008 for me at the Summer Olympics there, I just think that the technology has come so far and the capabilities of China, you know, to surveil people. We were told that, you know, assume that every communication you made via email, text message, telephone, anything was being monitored, read, surveilled, and just assume that anything you say was being heard.
Dave Shinen is here from the Washington Post. I'm glad you got back. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're strumming the guitar in Patterson Park. He is with the Washington Post. He covered all things Olympics. The questions your friends ask and stuff. I mean, I'm sort of a weird friend, but I've had press badges and been behind the rope and been on the special shuttles and been, you know, had the police escorts. I've done all that stuff. What about this? How many days were you there? Like, let's start with that. And did you, were you free to like go do anything at all? Give me a day in the life of Dave. Yeah.
So I'll give you a day. I was there about like, I think 23 days.
Wow.
You know, I mean, let's just put it this way, that to pull off one single story in these Olympics required, first of all, you had to test negative for COVID that morning. Every day we got tested.
What happened if you pop positive? Did anybody test positive over there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, what happened to them?
Nobody. I know some media members who tested negative here in the States before they got on the plane. You're required to test negative twice within 72 hours of your flight. They did that. They got to China and tested positive. And in one case, this friend of mine, I think it was probably a residual effect of a positive of being positive for coronavirus, you know, months ago, and was over it, you know, testing negative here in the States. But for some reason, the test in China showed him as positive. He goes into the isolation facility where you're quarantined from the rest of you know, the media. And in fact, it's a quarantine within a quarantine, because we're all quarantined in China during these Olympics. We were all in this closed loop where it was designed so that you had no contact with anybody.
You didn't meet a Chinese person the time you were there who wasn't in a suit. Is that what you're telling me?
Who was not in the closed loop. Correct. So we had bus drivers who were in the closed loop and who, you know, apparently, you know, had to say goodbye to their families for the whole time because they could not interact with their families outside the closed loop. So closed loop drivers, closed loop hotel employees. There was a fleet of taxis that were closed loop. And I'll tell you one story involving the taxi. I was in a closed loop taxi going, I can't even remember which venue it was. And he got lost and he pulls over at one point to try to ask a police officer to help him find the place he was going. But because he's in the closed loop and the police officer is not, he could not roll down his window to ask questions. So he's screaming through the window, through a mask. We were masked at all times, N95 masks, 14 hours a day or whatever it was. So he's in a mask, the police officer's in a mask, and they've got the car window rolled up because they're not allowed to roll it down because he's in the closed loop. The police officer is not. You're not allowed to breathe the air of people outside the closed loop. So that was kind of, you know, disconcerting.
And you're being monitored.
Yeah. I mean, you assume that, you know, you're on camera in the cab, you're, you know, who knows what, you know, your hotel rooms, God only knows. I mean, everything was monitored. Yeah, there were security cameras everywhere.
Dude, I know you to be one of the, like, happier sports writers, right, for all the misery you've been through covering the Redskins and the Orioles over the course of time. And you like the beat. You like your music. You like your gig. I don't hear you bitch much. Are you regretful that you did it? Or are you like, that was the craziest friggin' thing, space wars thing that I've ever dealt with? And I know people go through a lot worse. They're going through a lot worse today in Kiev, right? I mean, you were over in Sochi taking videos and laughing about the toilets. And I guess it certainly, from what communism is and what we talk about, what these countries are like and what surveillance is like and what, you know, what it's like to be in Putin's Russia or what it's like to be in China, where you're a media member and you're sort of targeted as such, right? You're not a regular person. You're not just there to hang out. You're there to report, which makes you a suspect, quite frankly.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, we have foreign correspondents who are based there, news side, not sports correspondents. And, you know, I mean, one of our Beijing bureau chief is booted out of the country, basically. And he was allowed, it's funny, he was allowed to be part of this Olympics group because of the closed loop and the IOC oversight. They couldn't keep him out. So our Beijing bureau chief, who was expelled from the country, was back in there in the closed loop working for us again. So,
and expelled, you know, no doubt, yeah, because he was reporting truth, right? Like, he was there.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, man. It's very, very strange, a long, strange trip. Yeah.
Well, you did China and you've done Russia, right? And like, I keep saying
China twice.
After this week, it feels like these are going to become North Korea to some, not, maybe not China, because the NBA's in there and doing business. And was it anything normal going on that you could tell when you're in a cab driving through, let's be honest, 20 million people? I mean, if you got in a regular cab out in regular traffic, you saw regular Beijing. I mean, what's going on over there?
Yeah, I mean, it was hard to tell because you couldn't talk to anybody. You could, you know, I mean, everything, the only things I saw of China this time was from the windows of a bus. I mean, people looked to be going along their normal days. You know, we weren't allowed to eat in restaurants because of, you know, the closed loop. We were restricted to whatever you could find in your hotels, your closed loop hotels, and the venues where you were covering events. I never had a single conversation with a Chinese person who wasn't in the closed loop. It was really hard to get a sense of the everyday lives of the Chinese people. And that's, you know, that's too bad. I mean, that's part of the allure of an Olympics for me is getting a feel for the country and the people. And, you know, I got that in Russia. I was able to talk to Russian people, eat in restaurants. You know, I walked along the Black Sea there in 2008 in China. I saw the Great Wall. I ate great meals in restaurants. Talked, you know, it was very different this time. You were separated. You were walled off from the people. It was as if this Olympics was going on. It could have been going on a soundstage somewhere, because it was fake China. You know, you were there, but you weren't really there.
I loved my time in China. I mean, I was there 5 days, had a good time, ate great meals, met interesting people. Nobody spoke English. It was completely a challenge just to try to communicate, which I kind of enjoyed for a little while. Let you know how difficult it is for animals to communicate with us when they don't speak the same language. You know, Dave Shinen is here from the Washington Post, and trying to find my way around in China. For you, with the American contingent of going over there, participating in this thing that the IOC puts on for money. We're talking about the World Cup here at this point and these different international competitions and where Putin sits in it at this point. I know a lot of American cities and a lot of worldwide cities have just said, we're not doing business with the thing's corrupt, the thing's dirty. We don't want to put it on here. You've been to these places like Athens and Rio and these places where they've ripped the places up. And Lord knows what is in Manaus at this point after the World Cup and the Olympics. But is this something that's still a good participation for the United States to be a part of at this point? Or is the whole thing so screwed up as to not be put back together again in any sort of, I don't want to say non-political way, that would be stupid for me, but at least to get it back onto the track where it doesn't feel crooked, because it feels really crooked.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple things. I mean, first of all, you know, the fact that the Olympics went back to Beijing 14 years after the Summer Games and put a Winter Games there, it was reflective of the fact that nobody wanted these Olympics back in, you know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when they put them up for bids. There were great European cities. I want to say Stockholm was one, maybe Oslo, that were prepared to bid for these games, but then the public shot them down in referendums. And I think that was a function of seeing things happen in Athens and elsewhere where, you know, countries basically bankrupted themselves to stage these games. So nobody wanted the 2022 Winter Olympics, and it wound up being a decision between Beijing and Kazakhstan. And
that's a little different than Vancouver and Salt Lake and Montreal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like literally, right?
So that happened. And I think when that happened, though, the IOC got wise to the fact they needed to make some change. And they did change the bidding process to make it more transparent and make it less of a money grab. And so what we wound up now is the next, you know, three or four Olympics are in pretty cool places, right? So 2024 is in Paris, 2026 Winter Games are in Milan, Cortina, Italy, 2028 is in LA, Brisbane in 2032, I guess. So things have improved.
You ever been to Brisbane?
I have not.
Stick around the post till you get to that gig. All right. I mean, I know this one was really crappy, but to hang out for Brisbane.
I'm not sure, man. 10 years from now.
That's what you said 10 years ago, bro. Yeah, that's true. That's really interesting. Cause I didn't know that. I didn't know these places you're giving me now. But then again, you're 2 weeks removed from being over in this issue. I don't know what else to say. I mean, like, that they sanctioned it, put it on, did it the way they did it. Do you see yourself in Paris in 2 years and it being somewhat normal? And will there be any, I mean, who pays the price when they cheat like this, right? When the Russian kid that tests dirty gets to play and the American kid that doesn't is back here writing a blog.
Yeah. I certainly hope I'm in Paris in 2 years. I love covering the Olympics. Certainly in normal times, I love it. I can't say I love this one, but I'll put it this way. You know, when my boss told me he needed me to go to Beijing for this one, I said, hey, you know, if I do this, and I have no desire to do this one. I've already been to Beijing. I don't, you know, but I'll do it. But does that put me on the team for Paris in 24? And, you know, of course he couldn't promise that or anything, but that's the mission in my mind. You know, I'll take this one for the team in order to get to Paris in 2024. I think that one could be an amazing, awesome experience, not just because it's Paris, but hopefully, I mean, you know, we're out of the pandemic is over. I mean, they've already announced that the opening ceremonies are going to take place along down. They're going to put everybody in boats down the Seine River, and people are going to be lined on both shores of it. It's just, you know, I think it could be an amazing experience. So I definitely want to do that one.
Sinatra wrote a great song about that. I mean, you know, I love Paris and every moment of the day. The Dave Scheinen is here from the Washington Post. He is he's back from Beijing. You done with sports for a while? You going back to rock and roll? When are you putting the band together? What's happened with the music career, man? This Olympics thing's getting in the way of your music career.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't guess I have too much going on now. I did put out a record back in, I want to say October, November, maybe. Called The Measure of Things. I was really happy about that. Really proud of that record. And
still are. It hadn't that long ago. Yeah. You don't have to have an album every year.
Yeah, I had some
Dave.
Great friends on it. Yeah, I'm not going to have another one in 22, I don't believe. But, you know, I've got a fresh batch of songs, and at some point I'm going to, you know, iron them into shape and get in the studio and make another one.
What's got you interested in sports these days? Is anything caught your eye at all? The baseball mess, the new team down in DC. I mean, it's just you're decompressing from knowing everything about some Norwegian speed skater that I've never heard of.
Well, yeah, I mean, I certainly am following the baseball labor wars with interest, having covered some of those before. You know, the 2002 CBA negotiation, which I thought was kind of a watershed moment. I am following that.
The Peter Angelos to the rescue story, right?
Yeah,
like that literally,
was the one.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I'm following that pretty closely. I feel like, you know, today is obviously a huge day in that. And I do think that, you know, we're likely to lose some games in this season. I don't know how many, but, you know, I think that the union is in a very interesting place now where they lost ground in the last couple of CBAs, and they realize that, and they're trying to claw back some of it right now. But the owners are not inclined to go back to those, you know, CBA policies. And it's a really critical moment for this sport because, among other things, you know, the product, you and I have talked about this in the past, the product needs help. The product needs to be fixed. And when you're spending all this time squabbling over the money, you're not addressing the problems in the game itself that I think are hemorrhaging fans right now.
Well, in that case, not getting on the diamond, but also just the bad faith with these Florida communities and these Arizona communities that they promise them the sun, the moon, and the stars. They've been doing it for two generations. They've been doing it since Haines City, where I'm sure you watched Royals games and Kissimmee and Vero Beach and, you know, what the Angelos has promised the Sarasota people. And it's just, they just sail it off. They've just sailed off April kind of sort of already in opening day. And it feels like one more stake, right? Like in regard to the things that they've done to hurt themselves. This feels like, well, it's not out of character that this would happen. I mean, if you would have said to me in December, are they going to figure this out? I'd probably say probably not. And like right now, if you say to me, will it cost them the whole year? Will there be an all-star break? Will there be an opening day? I mean, I guess at some point they'll come to their senses and play, but it doesn't feel like the owners like the game all that much. I mean, it doesn't feel like the people running it really like it all that much or that it's very much fun for them.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, you know, we'd been lulled into this false sense of security by the fact that it's been two decades of labor peace. You know, they always did get the deals done in the last three or four negotiations. We haven't had a strike. We haven't had a work stoppage in almost two decades. So I think that we were lulled into this false sense of security that, you know, everything was fine and it's not. And I think where it really showed up was during the 2020 and 21 season. They were trying to salvage seasons during the pandemic and could not get together on an agreement, and MLB had to implement the last ditch scenario of a 60 game season in 2020. And that was a sign to me that we were in huge trouble in 22 with the labor negotiation, and it's come to be.
It's felt like they need to read the room a little bit better. And back in 93, 94, 95, the city was red hot. A lot of baseball communities were red hot. Cost to Montreal at the time, though, right? I mean, they really screwed some places up. The 0-2 thing was close, but I was on the air for all that. That was life or death amongst the citizenry here in Baltimore. Dude, 20 years later, I don't know anybody. Even the people that like baseball don't care whether they play or not. Like, that's the weird part. And it, you know, and John Angelo's having press conferences. You weren't around for that, right? The McCartney thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they put the McCartney tickets right on sale for $500. You would have thought that McCartney hadn't played since Candlestick with the Beatles. Like, literally, like at $500, this is the only thing they got going on this summer. And the owner shows up to answer questions about that, but not about like a work stoppage. It just feels to me like there's not enough care. There's a lot of lawyers, but there's not a lot of there's no conciliate. Who are the people in the room that's going to make this right? It feels like they have lawyers that hate each other. It doesn't feel like there's anybody in the middle saying, whoa, 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 we got to go goose here. Let's not shoot it. I don't hear voices of reason coming out of these rooms, maybe in a way that even 30 years ago, they realized there were some stakes and that people cared.
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing is that Rob Manfred, who's now the commissioner, was the chief labor lawyer under Bud Selig and the guy who hammered out agreements, you know, time after time with Michael Weiner from the union. And again, I think that lulled us into a false sense of security that, well, Rob Manfred was the former labor boss. I'm the former labor lawyer for MLB. Now he's the commissioner, but he understands the labor situation and it's going to get deals done. So again, you know, false sense of security. You know, on the labor side, I mean, after getting kind of, you know, after losing ground in the last two negotiations, the union hired sort of a hardcore negotiator, litigator, Bruce Meyer, and he is now leading their negotiating team in this one, and he rubs owners the wrong way. You know, that's been made clear. But, you know, if you're the union, you're not looking to make friends. You're trying to claw back some of the losses that you've endured the last couple of negotiations and get a larger piece of the pie for the players. It's pretty simple.
They don't like Meyer. They did, as I remember, they weren't real big on like Orza or Marvin Miller or Don Fear. Yeah. None of these guys, you know, didn't bring a stick. You know, they didn't bring carrots. They brought sticks, literally all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the nature of it, right? You're not going to like the guy across the table in a situation like that. But right now they definitely seem to have a clash of not just philosophies, but personalities.
I've fallen into music and song, Shine. And so your band and your music and the John Mayer concert last week before he got COVID and the upcoming Merriweather schedule and the Foo Fighters coming. The concerts are going to go on. Whether they play baseball or not, I don't know. But I hope you and I get a beverage together sometime soon. I get to hear you strum the guitar if you're out doing such things. And I'm glad that they released you after 23 days over there in Beijing. Let you come back here to your family, whom you love.
Yeah, same here. Man, let's do that. Let's get a.
You look tired, dude. You look like this was like. It looks like. Hey, it felt like on Facebook when I saw him. Like, oh, I got to have him on. But these aren't stories you really want to tell, man. It feels like a real ordeal, right?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I'm still getting my feet back under me with, you know, jet lag and everything else. I mean, it's been 6 days. You know, I'm still not getting my sleep exactly right, but. Yeah, I'm getting there, man. And, you know, I'm fine. You don't got to worry about me.
You'll be ready for Commander season. I know you will be. Dave Shinen joining us here. You got anything to say about Commanders or no? No, silent on that. You done?
Yeah, I got nothing.
It beats the old one.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll do something about the owner before it's all over. Dave Shinen is here. Follow him out at the Washington Post. Follow him. If you see a guy around Patterson Park near the pagoda, looks like Dave, like, hey, Dave. Yeah. Dave lives here in Baltimore, even though he writes for the Washington Post. And hey, what's your next assignment? What are they sticking you on? Baseball or something boring? Or no, what are they sticking you on?
The very next thing, the thing I'm working on right now actually is a profile of a Paralympic athlete who's in Beijing right now. The opening ceremonies of the Paralympic Games are Friday. And so I've got a nice profile of a biathlete from that games. Yeah.
Well, I keep good company with Jessica Long up here in Baltimore with the multi-time award winning. She's my Facebook friend doing things too.
Amazing.
So, hey man, take care of yourself and rest up a little bit, man. I feel bad for all you went through. And I just wanted to hear the horror stories, you know? So
yeah.
At least they weren't that horrible. You're home. You're back here. Get your American passport out. Kiss the earth at Dulles when you land. He is Dave Shinen at the Washington Post. He's here in Baltimore. I'm everywhere, too. I got to get Dave out for a real crab cake, and we'll just sit around talking about music and rock and roll. Wise Conversations, and, of course, always brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets and the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, coming to Canton Friday at the Nachos. Mama's on the Half Shell, next to Nacho Mama's, down on the square in Canton. I know a place Dave and I know very, very well. The whole schedule's up at BaltimorePositive.com. Stay with us.